I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It is one of the great American success stories. With a $500 loan backed by his mother's furniture as collateral, publisher John H. Johnson and his wife Eunice Walker Johnson founded a publishing company that sought to document the lives of Black Americans with the dignity and breadth that they saw missing in mainstream media at a time when Blacks were generally presented as thugs and layabouts if they were covered at all. And although African Americans have long since cracked the pages of the major publications, to this day, it is rare to find a Black-owned barbershop, beauty shop, or other establishment without a copy of Ebony and Jet magazine in the magazine rack. Johnson Publications have made history even as their reporters have been covering it, from publishing the graphic photos of the teenager Emmett Till, who was murdered and mutilated by racist whites in the South in 1955, to the decision to build one of the only major downtown office buildings designed by an African American in 1972. Through it all, Johnson Publishing Company has remained a family affair. It is now in the hands of John and Eunice Johnson's daughter, Linda Johnson Rice. And as the National Association of Black Journalists holds its annual meeting in Philadelphia, we wanted to ask one of its highest profile members about the past, present, and future of Black-owned media. So, Linda Johnson Rice is kind enough to join us now from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Linda Johnson Rice, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, as we mentioned, that you took over the role of leading the company from your parents, but I did want to ask, you know, your company has such a powerful legacy. Did you always know that you were going to lead the company someday? And did you want to? You know, many offspring chafe at going into the family business.
I know. Some people feel that they've been forced into it. I actually was sort of born into it. It's really funny because after school, when I was little, from probably age 6 or 7, I went to the office. I would work, not work, I was there with my mother while my mother was working at the company and my father. And so, you know, sort of my playground was our company. That's really where I grew up. And it was interesting because neither one of my parents ever said to me, well, you know, we want you to come and work in the business. We want you to come and work at Johnson Publishing. It was really sort of by osmosis. And it was just it's a very interesting and dynamic place to be. And you're in the media business. So especially as a kid, all of these celebrities would come by. So, you know, your eyes get big as saucers and it's all so fascinating. So I found that very appealing. And then as I got older and was in high school, I spent my summers working at the company and really working for my mother, who was no easy, you know, easy taskmaster here, and spent time with her going to Europe, working with her and buying clothes for the Ebony Fashion Fair, and then really went to college and spent the summers from college back at the company again, working really and shadowing my father. So it was really very, very natural. It was a very natural progression for me.
So obviously I want to talk about you, but I did want to ask you if you could to tell me a story about each of your parents and their management style and what you think you learned from each of them. And we were talking about your mother, so why don't we start with her. Your mother, for those who are not aware, fashion icon, started the Ebony Fashion Fair, the line of Fashion Fair Cosmetics, pivotal in kind of connecting African Americans with the world of high fashion and glamour. So tell me what you think you learned from her.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really learned a great sense of self, and that means to really have pride in everything that you do and how you carry yourself and how you feel about yourself. I mean, I think that was really important to her, and that's really what she tried to impart with the models for the Ebony Fashion Fair, because I would sit there and watch her interview these young ladies, and they were young. Some of these models were 18, 19, and 20 years old, and this was a major opportunity for them. And she always tried to instill in them a sense of self-confidence and a sense of their own inner beauty and their own sense of self-worth. And I also realized how very hard my mother worked and how very disciplined she was and how many doors she really broke down when she traveled overseas to buy from these very expensive haute couture designers who had never, ever seen a Black woman buy these clothes and had never had a Black woman attend these shows. This was really groundbreaking. And so I watched how my mother carried herself with great dignity, and really walked into the room as if she belonged there, and she did, just like everyone else.
Did you ever have any of those, you know, awful stories that some kids have of seeing their parents treated, particularly in that era, as less than they should have been?
Yes, of course I did, because here she is, a black woman coming in to these very expensive couture houses. And they were like, first of all, what is Ebony? They had no idea it was a magazine. They didn't know anything about it. And they're like, well, why should we sell to you? How are you going to promote our clothes? How is this going to help us? And really, I think it was ignorance. It was pure ignorance in the beginning. And some were just downright mean. And then others were very smart and realized that there was a market here and that this was a woman who was coming in and buying the clothes, not asking anyone to loan her clothes for a charitable fashion show, but to buy them. And so, you know, I have to tell you, with that pocketbook came respect.
I hear you. What about your dad? What do you think you learned as a manager from him?
Well, I would say with my father, it was always to be firm and honest and direct with people, but to be very fair with people. And he was always very good at reading people and reading what they wanted and being able to get the best out of them. And in turn, the best out of them would also be the best that was for him and for the company. And he, you know, he always believed in that old adage that as a salesman, that the sale begins when the customer says no. And so he never took no for an answer, but he was always very, very smart in how he got people to turn those no's into yeses and really had a very, very focused frame of mind. And because of that focus, I think he had to have that in really growing Johnson Publishing Company and growing Ebony and Jet. He never veered off that path of success and wanting these magazines and these brands to achieve.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Linda Johnson Rice, the chair of Johnson Publishing Company, responsible for Ebony and Jet magazines, the number one African-American owned and operated publishing company in the world. You know, more recently, your company's been in the news after you sold an equity stake in the Johnson Publishing Company to J.P. Morgan Chase's Special Investments Group. Being that Johnson Publishing has always been family-owned and independent, was this a difficult decision for you, and what is the advantage to your company of doing this?
Well, it was a decision that was not taken lightly, that's for sure. I mean, I really had to really think about this, but I also realized that in the media business, which has been a very challenging business, not just for African-American media, but for mainstream media as well, I really wanted this business to grow. And I really stopped and I thought, you know, if we really want to expand and we want to expand Ebony and Jet and Fashion Fair Cosmetics, which is another division of our company, as brands, right now we just can't do this alone. It's too challenging of an environment. And so to have a company like J.P. Morgan Chase come in and want to make an investment in the company, and let me underscore the fact that it is an investment. Johnson Publishing Company is still majority black owned by myself. It's still a Johnson Publishing. Let me underscore the Johnson in that. But understand that J.P. Morgan Chase came in and they really looked at our business and looked at the brands and said, you know what? There is tremendous growth here. These are great brands. And we see the potential here. And so what we did was we really had business plans in place for each of the brands, for Ebony, for Jet, and for Fashion Fair. And now their investment allows us really to accelerate those plans.
You know, great. Well, I know a lot of people have, I would think, particularly people who are so protective of the legacy of Johnson Publishing, have been, you know, worried about your selling out, as it were. And I don't mean that in a political sense. I mean it just in a financial sense. But, you know, this is a very challenging time for all publications, everybody in the media, as you've mentioned. You know, some venerable publications like Gourmet Magazine have gone out of business. Business Week and Vibe have been acquired by investment firms. Even, you know, BET, the Black Entertainment Television, has been acquired by Viacom. Why not sell out?
Because I still believe that it needs to be Johnson Publishing Company. It needs to be owned by the Johnson family. This is my legacy. This is my heritage. This is my life. And I really believe that there is so much more to do and so much more that we can do in growing our brands and in reaching Black America, that I want to be a part of that. And I want to be a significant part of that.
And speaking of being read by and seen and experienced by Black America, you know, per se, it's also the case that Ebony and Jet have seen, as many magazines that serving lots of different audiences have seen, a real hemorrhaging of their circulation with the recession. Can you remain viable being Black focused?
The answer to that is absolutely yes. And actually, Ebony has regained its circulation position. And as of our last report, we are gaining in circulation, which is really tremendous.
To which level? In 2008, you were at an average of about 1.3 million readers for Ebony.
Right. Our guarantee for Ebony is 1,250,000. We are meeting our guarantee for Ebony.
So you're almost back to 2008 levels.
That's right. And for Jet, we are just shy of our guarantee, but we're really taking another look at Jet as a publication and as a brand. And it will be a publication, but we're also really talking about how to expand Jet in the digital space as well. But I think there really is a really important place for African American media, for Black media. There's a sense of authenticity that comes with Ebony and with being in the pages of Ebony and being in the pages of Jet. And there are very few national media outlets that are, first of all, African-American owned, majority African-American owned, and really speak to our community with a sense of pride, a sense of authority, a sense of ownership. And that's what we do, and that's what we're going to continue to do. So, and our audience has told us that. That's what they come to us for.
How do you appeal? I'm sure this is one of those things that you think about, you know, all day, every day. But I am interested in how you appeal to a new generation of potential readers, either a website or either a digital publication or a physical publication, who perhaps don't have the same need of a media sanctuary, if I can put it that, that perhaps their forebears did. And, you know, as we mentioned, you know, Ebony and Jet were covering African Americans in a serious way, in a dignified way, at a time when the only stories you'd find about Black people per se were a crime that was allegedly committed. Okay? So that's no longer the case now. And yet, so Ebony and Jet did two things. They did the news of the community that people wanted to hear, but they also did a lot of best foot forward. You know, we really do have nice houses. We really do dress well, have stable families. So what do you do with a new generation that doesn't necessarily feel a need to have that kind of validation?
Well, I think to a point, they do want that validation. I mean, you know, it's 53% of African Americans believe that the mainstream media has not stopped reinforcing sort of these Black stereotypes and things that are all about crime and things that aren't necessarily positive. But we also really are covering events that really affect the Black community. So if it's AIDS, I mean, we've done a partnership with Walgreens and the Greater Than AIDS Foundation. That was featured in our June issue. And then we have our August issue, which is about Black wealth, which is so topical now because of the lack of it. But these are issues that we really try to attack as pillars for Johnson Publishing Company, and they're pillars in the community. So it's AIDS, it's health, it's wealth, it's education. I mean, these are things that still are very, very prevalent in our community. So these are things that affect us as Black Americans. That hasn't changed.
What is next for you? If you and I were to, and I hope we will, speak again.
We will, you know, speak again.
5 years from now. What do you hope we'll be talking about?
Well, I think you're going to be talking about Ebony and Jet still, as of course, but you will be talking about them as magazines, but really more as brands, because I think you're going to see some extensions of Ebony and really as a lifestyle, because there are wonderful departments that have been created within the pages of Ebony with our new, relatively new now, editor-in-chief, Amy DuBose-Barnett. And, you know, some of them talk about elevating, about spirituality, about connection, about relationships. So I think you're going to see the Ebony lifestyle really evolve as a brand. And a similar thing will take place for Jet. Jet will be much more, I think, involved in social media. It's a little hipper, a little faster, a little quicker. And then we have our cosmetics business, Fashion Fair Cosmetics, which I think, you know, hopefully we will be able to expand really on a international basis, because as we know, there are women of color all over the world. So I think you'll see those brands expand.
So what do you think your mandate is now?
Now I think it's really to have the best people possible working at Johnson Publishing Company who have a great passion and an energy for the business, as we have with Desiree Rogers, who is our CEO, who really has guided and continues to guide the company in the right direction, and to really form also terrific strategic partnerships to grow the business. And I think that really is going to be a very, very important part of our business as we move forward.
And when you see companies like the Huffington Post, for example, which is launching a new service called Black Voices, focusing on issues of particular interest to the African-American community. For NBC Universal has a digital publication, The Griot,
yes,
which is also doing that job. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel great?
You know what?
You know, bring it on. Do you feel they're in my turf? Where were you?
No. You're funny. I don't have a problem with that because I really think there is room for everybody. I mean, look at all these mainstream websites that are out here, all these mainstream magazines that are out here. I don't fear that. I don't fear that. I think we have to tell our story at Ebony and Jet like no one else can, because we have the authenticity, we have the believability, and I think that's what we have to own.
Linda Johnson Rice is chair of Johnson Publishing Company. It's the number one African-American owned and operated publishing company in the world, publisher of Ebony and Jet magazines, and also Fashion Fair Cosmetics, the global cosmetics company for women of color. And she was kind enough to join us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Linda Johnson Rice, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Ryan Brooks, Bridget DeShagas, Arjun Hutchins, Eamon Malone, Sanaz Meshkinpour, Emily Oxenschlager, Amitha Parasher, Amy Ta, Sarah Ventry, and Saran Yitbarek. Our intern is John Ketchum. Our editor is Alicia Montgomery. She had a hand this week from Carol Van Dam. Our director is Monica Evstatieva. Our senior producer is Devar Ardalan. Our technical director is Brian Jarbo. He had a hand this week from Sarah Fishman, Greg Gavin, Vince Muse, and Neil Tevolt. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior editor is Portia Robertson-Migas. The executive producer is Tashima Walker. To tell us more, please go to npr.org and find us under the Programs tab. You can also friend me on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at TellMeMoreNPR. This week, we are adding a new member station to the growing Tell Me More family. It's WCPN in Cleveland. Welcome. We're so glad to have you. And tomorrow, we bring you a special program from the National Association of Black Journalists Convention in Philadelphia. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.